Well, next Sunday, I hope you'll be back for that. We're going to kick off a brand new series where for 12 weeks straight this whole fall, we're going to be looking at one book in the New Testament and sort of reading through it. And I'm super excited about it. We've been thinking and praying about it for a long time. So be back here next Sunday for that. But today, we're going to do something a little different. Today, we're going to talk about what this idea that I've entitled is meme. Now, you guys know what a meme is, right? Right, memes are those funny pictures that we think are funny and that we pass along via email or text or on social media to our friends and all that. So I thought, in case you don't know exactly what a meme is, I would show you a few today. So take a look at this one. Right, that's just one of those random funny memes. Right, here's another one. Right? Kind of funny. Like sometimes memes are one of those things where we look at our politics or we look at our country or we look at our culture and we find something funny about ourselves and we sort of make funny of it. But some of the best memes take a scene from like a movie or a film and then twist the words and say something funny about that. So yeah, do you guys? Right? That one's good, right? But we thought some of the best memes are the ones that you really look at yourself. So here's some about our own New Denver Church Community of Faith. Isn't that funny? I don't know how to say that. Steven. But yeah, that's funny. All right, here's another one. Some of you know about that, right? All right, how about this one? Oh, wow. Ouch. It's a little close to home, right? All right, one more. What would it be without Leo? So very good. So you can thank Brian Davis for all of those and his sense of humor. But here's the deal. It's not just what makes a meme is not just a funny caption or a funny picture. It's that it's something that's copied and reproduced and forwarded and sent to other people. It's when you take something and send it out on social media or send it through email or send it through a text. And what was originally one person's joke or what one person thought was funny is something that gets multiplied by the masses. In fact, when one of these things, you know, spreads really rapidly, we say that it goes viral, right? We compare it to a virus or an infection that just multiplies and you almost can't control in the way it gets multiplied. That's what makes a meme a meme. It's reproduced and replicated over and over and over. But what you probably didn't know is that memes existed before social media. They existed before the internet, they existed before texting or before email, before it was even possible to digitally copy and reproduce one of these images and send it to someone else. There were memes. In fact, the word meme was first coined in 1976 by a guy named Richard Dawkins, who wrote a book called The Selfish Gene. Now, Richard Dawkins is an interesting guy. What you might have heard about him is he's a scientist, and he's actually a militant, sort of rabid atheist. And many of his recent books have been anti-religion and anti-God, and that's what he's known for today. And we won't get into that, because early in his career, that's not what he was known for, and that's not what he was focused on. In fact, in 1976, he wrote this book called The Selfish Gene. And in The Selfish Gene, what he was trying to do was explain genetics to people, this new sort of form of science that people were starting to understand more about. And it was one of the first books that at a popular level explained what genetics was all about. And what he was trying to do is help us understand how genes, with those building blocks of DNA inside us, get reproduced and get replicated person to person, generation to generation. And in fact, he even went so far as to say that the way they get replicated and the way they get reproduced is selfish, because genes want to reproduce. They have this will to survive among the cells so much so that they will continue to replicate generation after generation. But within that long discussion about genes and genetics, Dawkins coined a new term. because he noticed that what was happening biologically with genetics inside our body was also happening culturally. And so look at what he says in his book. He wrote this: "I think that a new kind of replicator has recently emerged on this very planet. The new soup is the soup of human culture. We need a name for the new replicator, a noun that conveys the idea of a unit of cultural transmission or a unit of imitation. Mimeme comes from a suitable Greek root, but I want a monosyllable that sounds a bit like gene." Mimeme was an ancient Greek word that means imitate, imitation. And so he says, "I hope my classicist friends will forgive me if I abbreviate mimeme to meme." So he was the first person to basically make up this new word, meme, based on this ancient Greek word, which means imitation or to imitate. Now he goes on and he says this: "Examples of memes are tunes, ideas, catchphrases, clothes, fashions, ways of making pots or building arches. Just as genes propagate themselves in the gene pool by leaping from body to body via sperms or eggs, so memes propagate themselves in the meme pool by leaping from brain to brain via a process, which in the broad sense can be called imitation. When you plant a fertile meme in my mind, you literally parasitize my brain, turning it into a vehicle for the meme's propagation in just the way that a virus may parasitize the genetic mechanism of a host cell." So Dawkins was the first to coin this term meme and even to identify that it's like virus. Like, he was the one to say things go viral. And Dawkins basically was standing back, and he would be a little shocked to be quoted in a sermon in a church today, but he was standing back and he was saying and realizing that there's this thing that takes place in human culture where we have these ideas or we have these habits or we have these patterns of living or we have these behaviors and we pass them on and they somehow infiltrate our brains and our lives, and then we reproduce them and we replicate them among masses of people. And that they can spread so quickly that it's almost like a virus as well. And that's what memes do, that they reproduce and replicate ideas and behaviors and actions among people. So Dawkins was the first to coin this term, meme, in 1976. And he was the first to really compare this whole process to genetics and biology and all of those things. But the idea wasn't actually new. In fact, there have been people thinking about this for decades. In fact, there was this guy, he was a French anthropologist who had been thinking about this for decades, way before Dawkins. His name was René Girard. And René Girard was born just after World War I. He died 3 years ago. He was French. He grew up in France. He was a Roman Catholic. He got his PhD in history, so you know he's really smart. His first job was teaching French literature in the United States. But it was his study of French literature and his study of history that led him to really dive deep into human culture and what we would now call anthropology. And his anthropological ideas were really the most groundbreaking of all. His study of the human condition first came out in a book that he released in 1961, where he coined and put forward this theory of what he called mimetic desire. The theory of mimetic desire. Mimetic is from the same Greek word, means to imitate, and this is what he wrote, 1961. "Man is the creature who does not know what to desire, and he turns to others in order to make up his mind. We desire what others desire because we imitate their desires." So his theory is that all of our desires are just the reproduction or imitation of other people's desires. When we see someone else want something, we want that thing. And we see that all the time, right? Somebody else wants something and we want it. One little boy starts paying attention to one girl in the class, and suddenly a bunch of little boys start paying attention to that same girl in class. Dan called me this past week. Dan is one of our pastors. He's on sabbatical, and he's looking at buying a new backpack, and he had a couple of options he was looking at, and he wanted my opinion. And so I started looking, and suddenly, I think I need one of those new backpacks, right? That's just the way it works, because we're imitating creatures. We get our desires from other people. Now, Girard took this in all sorts of fascinating directions because he says, once we start imitating the desires of other people, different people start wanting the same thing, and that creates rivalries and conflict and competition, and that's at the heart of our culture. And it's just fascinating if you read some of his work. But at the bottom of all of it was this idea that we are imitating creatures, that we look around us and we get our desires. We're influenced by and we're shaped by what other people around us actually want. So Dawkins described this in biological terms, that we're imitating or reproducing creatures, and Girard described it in anthropological terms, that we're imitating or reproducing creatures. But religious people have been thinking about this for a long time. In fact, there was this theologian, and his name was Pelagius, and he was thinking about this way back in the 4th century. Pelagius was a British monk. And he was born in the 4th century and lived to the early 5th century. And this was right after the Christianity had become the official religion of the Roman Empire. So in the first few centuries, it wasn't, and Christians were persecuted for their faith. And then it becomes the official religion. And then it becomes trendy and cool and hip to be a Christian. And it's a status symbol. So everyone in culture is a Christian. And it was during that time that Pelagius was a British monk. He later moved to Rome, but he started writing, and one of the central things of his writing is that he said, and he believed, that God gave us the power to make moral choices. Let's not put that up yet. Let's go back. I'm going to read that in just a second. God gives us all the power to make moral choices, and we make moral choices every single day, right? And so you're always deciding every day how to spend your time, how to spend your money, whether you want to be kind to people or not, whether you want to hold grudges or forgive people or not. We're making these moral choices every single day, and we can make good choices or we can make bad choices. But it's within our power. He's a theologian. He's a Christian. God has given us the ability to choose either good choices or bad choices. And so look at what he wrote. Now we can read it. This is in a letter to a woman named Demetrius. He wrote this: "We cry out at God and we say, this is too hard. This is too difficult. We cannot do it. We are only human and hindered by the weakness of the flesh." So he imagines a scenario where someone's trying to make the right choice and they can't. And they're saying, "It's just too hard, God. I can't make the right choice. I'm just a weak human." And his response is, "What blind madness. What blatant presumption. By doing this, it is as if God has laid upon us commands which we were unable to bear. No one knows the extent of our strength better than the God who gave us that strength." So what he's essentially saying is, God doesn't ask us to be loving or kind or forgiving or generous if we weren't actually able to be loving, kind, or giving, or forgiving or generous. God wouldn't ask us to do something we can't actually do. He wouldn't expect that of us. He gives us the ability to do the things that he commands or he asks us to do. And yet the problem is we keep making bad choices. So why is that? Why is it that God gives us the ability to make good choices, but we keep making bad choices? And for Pelagius, here's what he thought. He thought the problem was we keep following the wrong examples. That we keep reproducing and imitating the bad choices of other people around us. And then it even goes all the way back to Adam. You look at what choice Adam made. Adam was just following what Eve did. And you look at what Adam and Eve wanted. They just wanted to be like God. There's Girard's mimetic desire, right? And we just keep reproducing and imitating their bad choice of not trusting God and being selfish in our own lives all throughout history. Now, it doesn't mean you actually look literally to Adam and follow his choice, but it means that we follow the choices of others. And so we all have parent figures in our lives, and we're growing up and we see them make bad choices, and oftentimes we just inherit and follow their bad choices. And we all have peer groups, and sometimes they make bad choices and we just follow and imitate their bad choices. And we have authority figures, or we have people that we look up to, and they make bad choices and we just follow and imitate and reproduce their bad choices. And so what we really need to do, Pelagius would say, is find better examples to follow. Now, there was a guy named Augustine who lived at this time. And Augustine didn't think that Pelagius took our sin nature seriously enough. So Augustine identified this thought that we all have this deep sin nature. And so Augustine looked and he said, the problem isn't that we're just following the wrong examples. The problem is we can't follow the right examples. There's something wrong deep down inside each one of us that we're not born neutral. It's not as if you can make good choices or bad choices and it's totally up to you. That we're all born with this inherent, what he would call a sin nature, or this inherent proclivity or bent towards selfishness. And that can't be overcome by just finding better examples. And interestingly, the whole church agreed with Augustine that yes, we're born with this inherent nature to be selfish. And anyone who's ever been a parent agrees with Augustine, right? We all know and we've all learned that yes, it just seems like we're born with this inherent bent towards only looking out for ourselves and not looking out for anyone or anything else. And as a result, because Augustine and the rest of the church agreed with Augustine, Pelagius was branded a heretic. And they took heresy really seriously back then. And so he was branded a heretic, and he was basically kicked out and excommunicated, and no one paid him any attention anymore. In fact, this picture is drawn by somebody many years later, and it's sort of drawn in not a very flattering way, because that's the way Pelagius is viewed throughout history. Because as Augustine thought, and I think Augustine was right here, if we don't have an inherent problem within us, well, then what does God come and save us from? I mean, if we can all make the right choices, what does God need to rescue or save us from? What's the point of grace if we already have the ability to make all the right choices in our lives? But I still think that misses the reality that Pelagius was uncovering a real human condition, that we are imitating creatures and that we do follow the examples of others. And he was so passionate about this because Pelagius looked around at that time and so many people that were Christians were living such horrible lives and making such horrible choices, and they didn't seem to care about it. And Pelagius was not satisfied with the idea of, well, they're just sinful. They can't help it. That's just what people do. They're sinful. What Pelagius wanted to say was like, no, you can make the right choices. You just need to start following better examples. Your parents and your peers and the people, all the people around you, all the people in your sphere of influence, they're influencing you to make bad decisions. If you just had better examples, you could make better choices. Because we're all imitating creatures. We just reproduce and imitate the desires and the thoughts and the attitudes and the patterns and the actions and the behaviors of others around us. If Pelagius was right about that, and if Girard was right, and if Dawkins was right, then maybe that's why when Jesus showed up, the first thing he said in about 30 AD, in this small little province in the armpit of the Roman Empire, right? The first thing he said to everyone he met was what? Follow me. Follow me. In fact, that's almost all Jesus said to people. Let me read you a few verses. These are from the New Testament, four of the gospel accounts written about Jesus' life. As Jesus walked beside the Sea of Galilee, he saw Simon and his brother Andrew casting a net into the lake, for they were fishermen. Come, follow me, Jesus said. Next day, Jesus decided to leave for Galilee. Finding Philip, he said to him, follow me. And as Jesus went on from there, he saw a man named Matthew sitting at a tax collector's booth. We read this story a few weeks ago. Stephen sort of walked us through it. Follow me, he told him. We go on, says this, Jesus looked at him. The him in this story is a rich man, this wealthy man who comes to him one day and starts asking Jesus all these questions. Jesus looked at him and loved him. One thing you lack, he said, go sell everything you have and give to the poor and you will have treasure in heaven. Then come, follow me. Yeah. Then he called the crowd to him. So this wasn't just his inner circle he said this to. He said this to everybody. He called the crowd to him along with his disciples. And he said, whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. Right? To everybody he meets, he says, follow me. Imitate me. Follow my example. And in that last passage, there was a key word that was used there. He said, anyone who wants to be my disciple. And the word that we translate disciple is used in all sorts of contexts back then. It means student. It means pupil. So in all sorts of classical literature, the same word is used to refer to students in a classroom or pupils that are sitting at the feet of a teacher or an instructor or a mentor or a tutor. So anybody that looks to somebody else and says, teach me and help me to learn what you know and to follow in your ways, that's this student. It could also mean an apprentice. So when Jesus was younger, he was probably an apprentice under his father. His father was a carpenter. And so his father probably pulled him aside as he got older and said, I'm going to show you the ways of carpentry. I'm going to teach you the skills you need to be a good carpenter. I'm going to teach you how to run the business. I'm going to help you learn the way of life that is being a carpenter. I'm going to, his father would say to him, as his son and his apprentice, I'm going to reproduce myself in you. That's what it means to be a disciple. So essentially, Jesus is saying to all these people, I want you to start following me. I want you to be my students, my pupils, my apprentices, my followers. I want you to imitate me. The things you see me do, I want you to do. The things you see me say, I want you to say. The ways you see me think, I want you to think. I want you to imitate me and follow me. That was a defining thing Jesus asked people to do. He taught them lots of stuff. He shared lots of knowledge with them, but it always came back to imitate me, follow me, do what I do. So much so that the very first thing we read it a second ago that he said to Peter was follow me. And the very last thing, and go read the end of the book of John, that he says to Peter, after 3 years, after all the healing and all the amazing things and all the teaching, after Jesus dies on the cross, rises from the dead, and then is standing and looking at this group of men and women, and he's about to leave, and he's going to pass the legacy and the future of this organization and this movement off to them. What does he say to Peter? Follow me. It's still about that. Like nothing has changed, Peter. You haven't outgrown it. You haven't learned so much that you're at the next level. Like it's still about just imitating me and following my example. Because Jesus knew that we're all following someone or something. Just like Gerard figured out, just like Dawkins figured out, just like Pelagius tried to explain, we're all following someone or something. We're all imitating. We're all shaped by other people. We're shaped by our peers. We're shaped by those people who raise us. We're shaped by authority figures. We're shaped by the people that we look up to and we think are successful and have the kind of life we want. We don't always recognize it, but they are subtly reproducing their ways and their lives in our lives. So, in the first century Palestine, do you know who people followed then? They followed the religious leaders. That, if there were any celebrities in the first century Palestine, it was the religious leaders. There's this group of people called the teachers of the law and the Pharisees, and sometimes they get a bad rap, like because they ended up opposing Jesus in a lot of ways, and sometimes we read the Bible, and the Pharisees and the teachers of the law, like, boo, hiss, like they're the bad guys, right? But in that culture, in that day, that's what everyone was looking towards. They were the celebrities. They were the ones who had their lives together. They were the ones who pleased God. They had the status. They had the worth. They dressed the way that everyone wanted to dress. They talked the way everyone wanted to talk. They were truly the celebrities at that time. That everyone, if you grew up as a Jewish boy or girl, you looked to them and you said, I want to be like them. And look at what Jesus says one day. This is from Matthew chapter 23. It says, then Jesus said to the crowds and to his disciples, the teachers of the law and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. So you must be careful to do everything they tell you, but do not do what they do, for they do not practice what they preach. So Jesus says they sit in Moses' seat, which is a figure of speech, meaning they're the ones who teach us the law of Moses. As good Israelites and Jews, that's what we live by. And what they teach us is actually good. You should do the things that they teach you to do. But don't do what they do, because they're not doing what they teach. They're not living the way that they say you should live. They're not practicing what they preach. So don't imitate them. Don't follow them. Don't let their lives be reproduced in your lives. And he would go on to say this, everything they do is done for people to see, They make their phylacteries wide. Phylacteries were these things they hung on their head that had little copies of the scripture or law in it. And the tassels on their garments long, that was part of the Jewish law to wear these tassels. You might see Orthodox Jews sometimes still do that. They loved the place of honor at banquets and the most important seats in the synagogues. They loved to be greeted with respect in the marketplace and to be called rabbi by others. And Jesus goes on and on in Matthew 23. We're not going to read the rest. But in other words, Jesus is basically saying, look, they wear the right stuff. They have the look, they talk the right way, they seemingly, everyone looks up to them and they have the right honor and they have the right worth and they have the right status and everyone wants to be like them. But Jesus would very harshly later say, don't follow them. Don't be like them. If you're not careful, their lives are gonna be reproduced in your lives, but don't let that happen. Instead, follow me. Imitate me. Don't let their desires and their ways become your ways. Now, it's a lot of history and interesting people and interesting stuff. Let me get personal for a second. Let me just ask you a question. Who are you following? I mean, if we're all following someone or something, who are you following? Is there somebody at work that you look at and you think, man, I want to be like her, I want to be like him? You're kind of following them. Is there a friend that you have and they'd have the coolest weekends and the coolest adventures and the coolest life and you think, man, I want to be like that. I wish my weekends were like that. And deep down, you're following that. You wish you could imitate them. You wish you could be more like them. Is there a family you look at? Is there a group of people you look at? Is there a celebrity? I mean, we'd like to say we don't follow them, but we do. We follow them. Who is it on TV or in the media or a politician or whoever it is that we look up to and we say, I want to be like that. I want to dress like them. I want to look like them. I want to live like them. I want to have their lifestyle. Who is it that you're following? What person at school that you look at and you think, that's the kind of person I want to be. That's the guy I want to be. Those are the kind of friends. Who is it that you're following? Because we're all following someone, and that's not wrong. That's not bad. That's just part of human nature. That's what Dawkins and Girard and others have discovered. We're all reproducing other people's lives and desires in our lives. We're all imitating other people. So who are you imitating? Who are you following? And what if today you not only ask that question, who am I following? But then you made this statement, or you answered it in this way: I want to follow Jesus. What if you made that statement today? What if you're here and you said, I don't know if I believe all the stuff that everyone else believes about him, but I want to follow him. He seems like the kind of guy to follow. I've still got all kinds of questions or hesitations, but I want to follow him. I'm not sure I like some of his followers. I'm not sure I want to be considered part of that tribe, but I want to follow him. Or maybe you've been coming to church or been a Christian for a long time, but you've even used this term, following Jesus, a lot, but you've never actually stepped back and thought, well, am I? Do I just come to church and just do the kind of cultural thing? But am I really following him? Because that's what he asked. That was his challenge to all of us. Follow me, imitate me. So if you want to explore that more, let me give you three suggestions this morning. Here's the first suggestion. Number one, decide if you want Jesus's life to be reproduced in yours. I mean, think about those words for a second. Is that really what you want? And that's not a guilt question, right? The answer doesn't have to be yes. You might be sitting here today and say, I'm not sure I want that. I don't think I'm ready for that. I'm just not, and you know what? I think Jesus would be okay with that. He said, that's totally fine, because when we read the stories, he let people kind of come and go whenever they wanted, and he let people just listen before they started following, and there were all sorts of people on the margins and the edges that were listening to him. They were dipping one toe in. I'm not ready to jump in with both feet, but I'll dip one toe in and see what this listening and following is like. I want to explore more of that. And he was okay with that. He said, bring your doubts, bring your questions, bring your hesitations. And we want to be, you need to know, if that's where you are, we want to be a community of faith that's like that, where we say, wherever you are on your journey of faith, and some places are not better than other places, we're all on a journey. And so if you're just listening, or you're just dipping your toe in, or you've still got big questions, this is a place where you can come and bring those. But maybe you have been a Christian for a long time, you've been going to church a long time, and you've even said, I'm a follower of Jesus. I follow Jesus. Like, you use that terminology to describe yourself. But do you really want his life to be reproduced in your life? Are you allowing his ways to be reproduced in your ways? Am I allowing that? Am I opening that? And that doesn't happen overnight. It doesn't happen instantly or immediately or even consistently. But over time, am I opening myself up more and more so that his thoughts are becoming my thoughts and his ways are becoming my ways? And it's not that I'm just becoming like Jesus. When I was a kid, I heard this term, like, be Christ-like, and I thought, like, do I have to grow my hair long and, like, wear a robe? And, like, is that what that means? And no, you can't become Jesus and I can't become Jesus. But what would it look like if Jesus lived your life? If he had your family and your home and your job, and your group of friends, and your personality, and your circumstances, how would he live that life? Do I really want his life to be reproduced in my life? Here's a second suggestion. Number two, come back every Sunday for the next 12 weeks. And that's not a joke. Seriously, next Sunday, we're starting a new series, and we're reading the earliest writing in the entire New Testament. It's a letter written to a group of people who were trying to figure out what it means to follow Jesus. I mean, literally, they live in a place, a different part of the Roman Empire, where they have nothing but bad examples around them. And they're always tempted to follow all of these bad examples. And so they're trying to navigate all the questions of what does it mean to follow the example of Jesus in our lives, and how do we do that? And so come and be a part of this and be here every Sunday for the next 12 Sundays, not because there's brownie points, not because we're taking attendance, not because God will think you're awesome because you were at church 12 Sundays in a row, not for any of those reasons, just because you take it seriously. And you say, I want Jesus's life to be reproduced in mine. And I don't know how to do that very well. And maybe I've been a Christian for a long time, but I'm still trying to figure that out and I need help. And so I'm gonna take it seriously and be here to explore that. Which leads to the third suggestion. Number three, join a D group. Join a D group. So you heard Stephen mention these before, and we've talked about them. These are small groups that meet together during the week, and really these groups just revolve around a simple question: how can we follow Jesus? And what if there was a place where 6 or 8 or 10 or 12 or 14 people could come together once a week in someone's home and just talk about how do we follow Jesus in our lives? And explore that and look at specific topics and look at specific challenges we're facing and pray for each other and encourage each other. And what if we all realize we're on this journey together and you can't do it alone? And we need to be on it together. And what if we also realize we need some leaders to help us out? We need some people who are maybe a couple of steps ahead of us in the journey that we can look at and that we can say, maybe they're following Jesus in ways that we need to follow Jesus, or I need to follow Jesus, and I can actually learn from them. Because I want to read you one more verse, and this is from the Apostle Paul. Look at what he wrote to some other followers of Jesus. He said, follow my example as I follow the example of Christ. And here's your Greek for today, right? Literally, mimete mou genesta kathos kago Christou, which means, there's that word in Greek, literally, imitate, be imitators of me as I am of Jesus. Be imitators of me. Paul is saying that to a group of people. Hey, in all the ways that I'm following Jesus, follow me. In the ways that you see Jesus' life being reproduced in my life, allow that to be reproduced in your life. In the ways that you see me following the example of Jesus, follow that example. And what if we had that same approach, that I can't do this on my own? And I need people who are on the journey with me. I need some peers who are beside me. And I probably need a few people who are in front of me that I can look at their lives and say, I know you're not perfect. I know you don't have it all together. I know you have your own challenges, right? But there are some ways that I've seen Jesus's life reproduce in your life. And I want that. Can you help me? Because I want to follow your example as you're following the example of Jesus. And so would you consider being a part of one of these groups? They're not perfect. They don't do everything perfectly, but they're just a vehicle. They're a way to enter the process and to be intentional about saying, I want to follow Jesus. So who are you following today? That's the question. Who are you imitating? Who are you shaped by? Whose life are you reproducing? Let me pray for us. God, we all want to live lives that are meaningful, that are full of grace and hope and peace and joy, that meet the challenges of life and trust that you're with us in those challenges. And God, we want to see your life, your son's life, reproduced in ours. Because as we read about him and as we learn about him, we see he was someone who loved people, who was compassionate, who had a sense of peace, who had a sense of grace, who had a sense of hope, even when he was facing the darkest nights. And we want that. At some level, I think we all want that. And so God, help us to know how to pursue that. Give us the grace when we stumble, and the mercy when we just don't know what we're doing, but help us to know today and make decisions to take some tangible and practical steps to pursue that in our lives. Pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.